check it out. Un territory. Ain't nobody been there. You understand? Undiscovered. So call somebody and tell somebody. There's a new day, and there's also a new sheriff in the town. A lot of things will be exposed real soon. Love you. Be good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 167 of the Uncharted Territory podcast. My name is Chad Olson, coming to you tonight from Gilbert, Iowa, where it's winter. It's whatever. It's been rainy, not super snowy. It's melted away some of the rain. We got over a great deal of fog. So it's just, 35 degrees. No big whoop. So let's go around and talk to everybody else here tonight. Let's see. How about Stuart Lowry? I'd like to know what the weather is going to be in Virginia this weekend, because I'm going to Washington, D.C., which last I heard is near Virginia.
Not only near Virginia, it's kind of eating up part of Virginia. It was a delightful 48 degrees today. Next few days are going to be in the 50s. And Chad, I think when you're here, it's going to be upper 40s, low 50s. So fairly warm for this time of year in Virginia, where we used to have winter, just didn't last as long as you guys. And now we just don't seem to have much winter. We've had a stretch in January, but it has been relatively mild. I guess I shouldn't complain, because when it gets really cold and lasts really long, it's just really bleak. But we're going to have a little clipper system moving through in the morning, might get a few snow showers. But other than that, it's going to be kind of delightful weather from here on for the next 7 days. So you should have good traveling weather and good weather for your stay, Chad.
Why, thank you.
Looking forward to the discussion this evening.
Appreciate that advanced weather report. And I'll be seeing Mr. Pete Beck on Sunday. I get in Saturday night, so me and Pete are going to hang out for a while on Sunday before I have to go start a conferencing. So it'll be lovely. All right. Corey, Minnesota, how you doing?
We're having a heat wave once again. Yes, a tropical heat wave. Well, for January, it's 40 degrees today, 40. Not negative 40, to the positive. And it's been beautiful. Most of our snow is gone. Like Iowa, we too had some fog the last couple days. Yesterday, as I drove to school, it was quite foggy. But it's been beautiful. Loving it. Almost don't need a jacket. And just great. So, yeah. And there's more sunlight now. So when I leave school, there's a little bit of sunlight after wrestling practice. It's like the light at the end of the tunnel. That's just awesome. So yeah, I'm very happy to be back. We've got our full team here, and we're ready to talk some classic stuff.
All right. Next, out the way of Buffalo, New York, Tim Dalton. Tim, how are you?
Hi, Chad. I'm doing well. We've got here in Buffalo weather. Normally this time of year, it's about 31 degrees. That's the average high temp. But we're up around 40 today. So woo.
We're above average.
Well, it's the first time anybody's ever said that about me. But we're going to be around 40 the next couple days. So no major precipitation, at least for a little while coming. So that's good. We with the warmer temps and a little bit of misty rain and stuff, we've knocked down most of the snow, or not most, but a lot of the snow. So that's kind of nice. You can see going around the corners when you're driving, and everything's good. So Buffalo's okay.
All right. And despite what I said earlier, you're okay too, Tim. So This weekend, we had ourselves a Phil Singer Games Perennial. It was a jam-packed day, I think about 7 or 8 hours. So thank you again, Todd and Mike, for putting on such a spectacular full of fun, frivolity, talking rooms, tournaments, and all sorts of stuff. Tim, what did you think? How long were you on, and what did you think of the day's events?
I didn't really get into the Perennial until the afternoon. More close to the time when Wolfie D came on, but I was on a little bit before that, just kind of checking out some of the tournament action going on and talking to some folks. So, but yeah, I enjoyed it. I stayed around through the end of the auction and then went about my other business that I had to do, but seemed like it was a nice event. Everybody had as far as I could tell anyway, had a good time. And it's always nice kind of seeing everybody and kind of doing these virtual get togethers when you can't do the real get togethers all the time. Kind of a nice way to keep in touch with the people playing the game.
I agree. Stuart, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I got there a little after three, I guess. Tournaments were coming to a close. Really enjoyed Wolfie D. I thought that was a good interview. Chad, you did a great job with that interview under duress, very fairly short notice. So that was well done. I thought he was an engaging guest, entertaining guest, and found him informative. And in the spirit of a lot of our interviews that we've done over these Zoomcast or whatever you want to call them, these perennials, I thought he was great. And we haven't had a dud yet, to the best of my knowledge. Enjoyed the panels, enjoyed all the discussion, enjoyed the con giveaways, especially really loved the blue inked Omega. And if that could serve as a precursor for more, I think promoters would really love that. I know I would. And in general, I thought it was a great time. I think these things, like Tim said, it's great to gather the community together. And over what we all know and love, which is this great game. And just was a lot of energy, and I thought it was was obviously well attended and a really fun time for all.
All right. Yeah, I think it was a good time. I wasn't really under duress interviewing Wolfie D. It was just very short notice. Oh, and Stuart's still drinking Nog. Good for you, Stuart. I saw some a couple weeks ago in the store, and I was going to ship it to you.
I'm going as long as I can this season.
All right. Very good. But yeah, I thought it was a fine day. It was fun to hang out in some of the rooms and just talk Legends with some folks. And, it sounds like people had fun who were doing the tournaments and stuff. And we talked to Mr. Wolfie D, and he was very engaging. It was fun to talk to him about, I didn't know what to expect when I asked him about Champions of the Galaxy, like what he remembered. But man, I mean, He remembered shit, he remembered. He was big into Spike, big into Thantos and stuff. So it was pretty cool. Well, I think they mentioned they got him some of the reimagined stuff as well. But he said he kind of leaned toward the original artwork. So, it was a good time. And then Tom came on and talked. And then we heard from, Ty and Zeke. And then Mike did a good job of interviewing Tom. Sam was unable to attend last minute, so Sam, hope you're doing well. And then we had an auction and raised a good deal of money for both the CAC and the TNT Hall of Fame. So it was a good day. So thank you again, Todd and Mike, for putting that thing on. At the con, we gave away some exclusives, much to the chagrin of some folks. We have Wardlow. From the Indies line, Omega for our Champions of the Galaxy in blue and white ink, which, yeah, maybe someday we'll get a black and white set. So we released some Legends cards, some Indie cards, and some Champions of the Galaxy cards. So Tom's going to release a set called The Secret History of the GWF with 8 or 9 women. So, yeah, some people are excited about that. And then I believe the first Indie set for the year is going to be Best of the Indies 2024. And I think somebody was announced. Was somebody announced for that? But I'm not sure who it was. Sorry, Zeke. That person was announced. I think it was a dude.
Thrillbilly.
Thrillbilly!
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yes, MWA fame. You guys just stick with me on the indie stuff.
Yeah. Stu's yeah. Where it's at.
Stu Lowry, fucking indie promoter extraordinaire. and then for the legends, we showed from the upcoming four pack, we're doing some nice artwork of Roadkill.
Yes.
So, like I said, it was a fun time building some excitement, getting the ball rolling for another fabulous year at Phil Singer Games. Corey!
Well, in all this excitement, Chad, I don't think you actually mentioned what the Legends release was for those who weren't there.
Oh, I thought I did.
No, you mentioned Wardlow, and I got to say, I'm super excited about Wardlow because I've been wanting him for a long time so I can bring him in with MJF.
There you go.
The Legends card, do you want to announce it, Chad?
No, you should, Corey, because to be honest, no one could hear your video.
Oh, see, yeah, and I was rushed to make a video for Todd, and so that's my fault. But
yeah, you should have put yourself in an isolation booth and put your microphone really close like this.
Anyway, so the Legends release was Manny Villalobos, a regular in the Dallas area, world-class, and the other GWF Global Wrestling Federation. He was the last GWF television champion. He kind of did a gimmick where he lost a lot of matches and all of a sudden scored a big upset. He beat Gary Young. That was his first big win. And then he got his car destroyed by Manny Fernandez. So that's a feud you gotta relive in the Legends promoters. That dastardly Manny Fernandez. And the thing was that, you know, he was a very, he was supposed to be, since he didn't win a lot of matches, he didn't have a lot of money. So a car dealership gave him the car and then Fernandez destroyed it. but that's Manny Villalobos. So yeah, right. Very, very fun little card to me.
And then after the Phil Singer Games perennial, it was the Royal Rumble. That was kind of fun to watch, although I did doze off during the men's one. I mean, they gotta quit. Those things are too damn late and too long. Oh my god. So anybody watch the Royal Rumble?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a good show. I mean, I just love the way they put these rumbles together with all the little, you know, stories within a story. And, you know, they're trying to finish some things up a little bit. They're trying to start a bunch of new stuff and continue some stuff that's going on. And I think they do a good job putting these rumbles together. I think they really do. You know, it can't be easy trying to figure out, well, if we have this person in, then we need to have that person in and trying to time it and work it all. But I thought the women's rumble, I thought both the rumbles were very good. It was kind of nice to see Jade Cargill come in and make her debut.
That was cool. Also, Grace. Grace got a big pop for her.
Where the hell is that coming from?
I said, oh my God, when she came out, and Emily said, what's wrong? And I had to explain to her who Jordynne Grace was. And she's not with them.
No. Mm-hmm. I hope that's the start of bigger and better things.
But people were excited about Jade Cargill.
That's cool. I think it was really cool. And the men's really the only real surprise you had was probably the return of Andrade.
Braun Breaker.
Breaker coming in in the
Brock Lesnar spot.
In the Brock Lesnar spot because of the lawsuit and all the issues going on there. But I thought that was kind of cool and I thought they did a good job of putting it together. It sucks that Punk got hurt. Tore his tricep.
Same thing.
I mean, just too bad because they really had something going, with him. But I thought Cody winning back to back, I thought was pretty cool. And and after Monday night, we'll see. We'll find out soon who he's going to be challenging at WrestleMania.
I tuned in for the men's rumble. I just didn't have time to get to the other stuff, but. Tuned in probably about number 8 or 9, I think, of the men's rumble, and yet to see the rest of that. And I always enjoy the rumble. I always try to watch it. Like Tim said, I like the different feuds and storylines that kind of played out within the match. I really liked the finish with Cody and Punk going back and forth and how it ended up. And I was just kind of, counting, and I'm there's probably somebody I missed because I don't remember people's names before they were on the indies, but we had a lot of people in the men's rumble that have cards in the game, a good number of people. Gunther, what's his name? Jonah Rock or whatever he's called in WWE. The big Australian guy. Bronson Reed. That's Jonah Rock. His name in WWE, Bronson Reed.
See that big fat guy?
Yeah, big Australian dude.
But I mean he's like a really freaking big guy.
Yeah, Gunther picked him up and slammed him in the match.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the game.
What's his name? Oh, Joan Rock, he said.
Yes. Yep. But yeah, there's Austin Theory, and there's others I'm sure I'm forgetting right now, but it's just kind of cool to see how many of the modern guys have cards in the game.
Mm-hmm. Man, that I want to see a Bron Breakker Gunther match after watching those two kind of square off. But they teased it, and then they both got tackled or something, right? So I don't think they have touched. Like Tim said, you know, they do a good job of setting stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was not super great was that four-way earlier on. That was kind of boring. And then what was the other match? Like, I really don't think I watched.
Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens, Logan Paul.
That was fine. I mean, yeah, you know, but it was a good one. It was a good screwball finish. I liked it.
Mm. Right. Yeah. No, it was fine. The four ways, I just, you know, I'm kind of over all these multiple person matches. As soon as they started doing something on the TV, I'm like, oh crap, they're gonna do a four way at the Rumble. I was like, it really does take away from everything. Just it when does. You've got all this stuff going on.
Just give me one versus one, baby. That's all I need. Black boots, black trunks.
Luthes never in a four-way. Yeah, that was the Royal Rumble. So tonight our main event is going to be a review of War Games 2092. We've come to that time in this Club Galactica Super Report. And Corey said, hey, we got to review this set. And it's like, all right, I guess we will. So War Games 2092. This was the first appearance of Johnny Rocket in the handbook, and he became a character. He's got a little sketch in there, and then we got his launching pad card about a year or two later, I think, ish. At the next Galacticon, did we get it? Is that when we got him and Sheik?
I feel like, I mean, I wasn't around, but I feel like the card says 1993 on it, so it'd be about 3 years later.
Oh,
okay.
I could be wrong. Somebody out there will know.
No, you're right. I was just trying to think, like, Snelly didn't draw them, so it must have been somebody else.
I want to say Sheik was Gustavich, but I'm not positive. Yeah,
I think you're right.
Maybe he drew both of them.
Yeah.
So that would be a few years later. Mm-hmm. Good call, Corey. Way to use your numbers.
Yeah, thank you. Problem.
One thing we can agree on is this was the first appearance of Chaos and Keepers of Stone. Might be the last appearance of me on this podcast, too. So Chaos of the Keepers and the Stone came in with quite the bang. Of course, there's the whole background story in the book about the Alpha Stone and how a mysterious figure led Chaos and Matador. We met him in a bar where all good stories start and gave him some maps, and they ended up on a 2-year quest to find a stone. And, you know, fuck, that's Friday night for me. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but... So Chaos got the Alpha Stone, and the Keepers of the Stone, who were the Guardians of Stone, immediately became his lackeys because he owned the stone. And I do have to say, the finished drawing was better than the drawing that was in the Super Report. That was a little rough of Chaos. I think he looked a little slovenly. This pulled them together a little better. And then we also had a different drawing for Scourge, right? Was that it? Scourge got a different drawing than in the Super Report?
That's
I think
right.
We talked about that when we looked at the Super Report.
Well, and the thing too is, I mean, talking about the drawings, if you look at the card for Chaos and you look at the cover of the booklet, it's a different drawing because the stone is, and the cover of the booklet, it's the one where the stone's around his neck.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the card, it's where it's kind of floating like the Cosmic Cube.
Yeah. Good call, Timmy.
Yeah, you know, blind squirrel.
So Chaos, I mean, Tim will talk to more about the rampant destruction that Chaos caused in his Fed. Because in my only Chad Olson booking, you know what I did with Chaos when I got this set? I didn't bring him in because I was building to an angle where I was going to bring in a different, like a second Fed to feud with the GWF. So I'm like, well, this guy would obviously be the champion of that Fed. So I didn't bring Chaos in for like 6 months. Shows how great I was. And I think at that point, I don't even know if we knew. Well, yeah, we knew there's going to be two sets a year because Tom and Tool said Summer Galacticon. But so then for the Keepers of the Stone, I brought them in. And since there was no stone to keep, I called them the Stormtroopers of Death, which was a Anthrax side band. So they made an immediate impact, feuded a lot with the Greek gods, and I think they swapped the titles back and forth a couple times. But, you know, they had pretty powerful tag finishers, but along the lines of greats like Mitsuko, no singles finishers to speak of. But they were, you know, still pretty good regardless of their singles finishers or lack thereof. And, of course, Chaos, one of the greatest champions for most folks in game history with his legendary card full of gimmicks and gizmos and the Alpha Stone. So, Tim, what did you think about when you first got Chaos and the Keepers of the Stone?
I was pretty impressed. I mean, you know, you looked at Chaos and he had the three finishers and you were like, holy crap, this guy. And then you were, you know, just kind of looking the card over. It was like, my God, this guy's just going to kill everybody. And I think for a lot of people, he did. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always liked the story with the keepers too, how they were kind of created by the stone. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought the drawings were okay. But yeah, I just thought it was kind of neat that they had tag finishers only because, you know, they were just there. They were just there to be a tag team, you know, and keep the stone. Right. So it kind of made sense. And yeah, I really liked them. I thought they were going to do some damage. The keepers never really did a lot for me, but holy crap, Chaos. I mean, yeah, he was a monster. I'm trying to look up the stats for him now.
While you're doing that, I will say Rogue, now that we've met him, he looks kind of like a juiced up Chuck Carter.
You know, that's not a bad call.
I know. Every once in a while.
Yeah, so let me see. So Chaos. So his overall record for me was 108 wins, 29 losses, and 4 draws, and he only lost 17 matches by pinfall of all of those.
Wow.
And he was my most dominant champion. He had, I believe at one point, I don't have the old records. I'd have to go through all my shows again. But I think he had a win streak of like 33 or 34 matches.
Wow.
And I mean, that's a win streak. That's not just, you know, he didn't get DQ'd. He just right. won every single match. Right. Maybe not by pinfall, but he won.
Right.
You know, but it was crazy how good he was for me.
Mm-hmm. Was he the
first? So yeah, rampant destruction.
Was he the first guy with a dazed one on level 3 defense, or did Brute have that on his 2090 card?
I think Brute had it.
Brute did, yeah.
Was he the first guy with a -5 power or agility?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And all A ratings, I think, the first one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. But yeah, I mean, he was just, I mean, it was crazy. And I mean, even when the stone went out, if you look at the stats, I mean, he's worse. He's still pretty freaking tough, even with the weak Alpha Stone.
Right.
And I love that gimmick too. I love the whole Alpha Stone gimmick. I loved when that would come into play during the matches. Mm-hmm. You know, and then sometimes it would power up again.
Right.
But yeah, I love the whole story. As goofy as the strange guy in a bar hands you a map and you find a stone in a cave. I mean, it's a bit much, but you know, I just really like all four of these guys, all the third force. I thought they were, why didn't they call it the fourth force if there's four guys? But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
They were the first independent team.
Okay.
That's all why. Right. They were neither good nor evil. They were the third.
Yeah, I just, Chaos was a beast and was easily the most dominant champion, Galaxian champion that I ever had.
All right. You know, like I said, getting a map from a weird guy in the bar, that's just Friday night here in G-Bert. So anyways, Stuart, how did this, how'd these guys do for you?
Keepers never really materialized for me. I keep being tempted to use them or trying to run some angles with them just to bring them back in because I like the team. I like the drawings for whatever reason. And I thought it was just kind of a cool creation. Like Tim, Chaos ran roughshod over my Fed when I was playing strictly a Kennen-style Fed. He had a 42-card reign before I kept title defenses, which was the longest in my Fed. He was the best ever until Godsend came along years later for me. Chaos was the man. He did, interestingly enough, though, have one of the more flukish losses in my GWF history. His second match, I think it was his second match ever, he lost to Ursa Major. It was just a ridiculous loss. It just no rhyme or reason. At least I think it was Ursa Midge. I think he was around then. I could be wrong. He lost to somebody he shouldn't have lost to, and I think it was him. And it was just, I just, that's always stuck with me because that should not have happened, but that's what happens with these crazy dice. But just a great character. I thought the drawing was fantastic. And I have since, ever since Chaos, I've kind of shied away from the big guys or the super heavyweights. I don't know, just kind of not my style. But I wasn't a Chaos at that particular time, but he might have ruined me on the big guys afterwards. They're just a little too dominant sometimes. But great card for that. Great card for Chaos in general. When he came along, he was so unique, and I really enjoyed him.
All right. Corey, how do you do for you?
I mean, Chaos did well for me. Nothing like, you know, what Tim said there, but, you know, multi-time Galaxian champion, you know, won it within the first few months of when I brought him in. I too love the Alpha Stone gimmick. You know, at the time when I brought him in, you know, a couple of years after he was actually released, the Undertaker was big with doing the urn gimmick with Paul Bearer. So I kind of, you know, saw it as a similar thing here where sometimes it would, the Alpha Stone would strengthen him and sometimes he'd weaken. So I always like that possibility that he could get weak during the match. The keepers, they didn't do as well as I thought they would. I too, like you said, Chad, they both had the tag finisher and were definitely tag specialists. And I believe, is this the first time we've had like a tag team where they both have the same tag finisher? I don't remember.
Probably.
If anybody, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of a cool, you know, little mm-hmm. footnote in GWF history. But yeah, they just never, I mean, they did okay for me, but not great. I didn't check my tag team title history, but I don't recall them holding the belts, if at all. You know, I liked the idea of them. You know, it was kind of a little far-fetched that they were kind of created by the Stone, right? That was part of the storyline, right?
Yes.
Because then it was kind of like, well, what happens when something happens to the Stone? Don't these guys just kind of go away? But
do they melt into clay?
Right. So I never played up that part of things too much. They were just kind of, you know, Chaos's henchmen, and were just there to, you know, to team up and to help out Chaos. But I didn't get into the Stone creation part.
All right. Very good. Let's see. Next, we have Tim, who's going to talk about Magnus Colby and Darkos.
Yeah, so this was the other big story in here is that now you've got Darkos as a wrestler. And you find out that the whole, you know, mastermind behind the Masked Assassins is really Magnus Colby, one of the richest men in the galaxy, who was kind of using, he was afraid that if he came in and failed, it would hurt him financially and just, you know, people would laugh at him because he would have to throw money at him. But yeah, so he had Darkos come in as like his front man, you know, pretty much ran the team and did everything, but didn't even tell the other people on the team what was going on. There's an inference that maybe Kraken knew, but we're not really sure. But yeah, so now you've got Darkos coming in and is a wrestler to fill out the team, which kind of picks up for the leaving Pit Viper, who went back to the Titans, I believe, in 91. And Darkos is going to team up with Deathmask in a team called Shocker, while Splatter and Whiplash are Nightmare. So that was going to be the team for the teams for the Assassins. But yeah, that's kind of the other big news here, you know, other than the coming of the Third Force and Chaos and all of that. Yeah, really cool kind of a story, in that you're finding out some of the behind the scenes things that were going on, you know, with Colby and all of that. Just good stuff. I really did a lot of, I used Colby quite a bit and all of that, but pretty cool thing, I think, to kind of use this and introduce Colby as a character. So I guess what did the rest of you guys think?
I, you know, until reviewing this set, I forgot that Colby came in with Darkos. You know, I just kind of remember his stuff down the line and the CPC, of course, and all that. But yeah, I liked how Tom put this together with, you know, Darkos being able to wrestle all along, and you know, they talked about his acting background and all that, and I enjoyed that side of it. Yeah, I always thought that was really cool, and you know, kind of just reminded of like some of these early manager cards where you had these big characters and they just had their distractor ratings, and you could use the interference chart if you wanted to, but that's they were interesting characters with very little on the card. But yeah, I liked using Darkos as a wrestler for a couple of years. He did fairly well for me. Liked him in the various assassin tag team combinations. I always just kind of enjoyed some of these, the way Tom would make cards different. You know, you had Darkos who had one down and then a higher pin, but a really strong level two offense and a decent finisher, especially for that time. Just always like to see how those kind of cards would play out, how they would do. I always like the artwork for Darkos, this drawing, and then his one that would come down later from Bendis. But I just always liked his mask and his look. Just thought it was a cool look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wound up in my Hall of Fame. I mean, just his team, Assassin Empire with Whiplash later on, and then he had another great team where I kind of did the comedy and tragedy masks before Theater mm-hmm. of Pain were a thing. But I had him in a tag team with Mad Jester, and they were a dominant team as well, even though both of them had pins of five. Mm-hmm. So think about that. So it was pretty cool. He did really well for me in tag action, and he if I had a Hall of Fame for real, he would probably be in it.
Well, it's also interesting he doesn't have a tag on level three.
Oh,
you know, and he's still a really good tag wrestler for you. You know.
Yeah, I should have done more with Darkos. I don't know why I didn't get into him, but I didn't for whatever reason. But you guys are talking me into it. I need to go back and revisit that card and see what I can do with him. Colby, I've done a lot with. He has managed various factions over the years. In fact, some of the most fun I had with him was when somebody created in GWFZ, and those sets, they created his son, Marcus Colby. And I've had a lot of fun with Mangus managing Marcus, if I can get all that straight. And just Colby has been one of the greatest managers in my Fed's history. These, you know, as I play Chronos style, he's still around and will be in perpetuity. He always is a nuisance to the baby faces. And it just, I thought it was a well-created character. And as far as managers go, certainly one of my favorites all time in the Champions of the Galaxy side.
Was Marcus Colby an MD?
Nice.
I tried.
Bada bing.
So, I think you're right, Corey. It just shows how much personality and storyline he had in him, because he didn't have anything on his back, you know. And he shouldn't have been a guy who ever did get in the ring, right? You know, he should be the guy with no stats. And, you know, I know with the GWF reimagined sets, they put some stats on, or not stats, but some gizmos on the back of some of these guys, and I don't remember off the top of my head what Colby's is. It might be pay the guy off or something. I just like the fact that he's burning a dollar bill or $100 bill, a la Dr. Jerry Graham. Probably by this time it's a $10,000 bill. And Darkos, I mean, you know, hey, we had Dr. Doom as a wrestler. What's not to like? I thought that was always pretty cool. And what's also cool about this right now is Kevin T. Butcher in his Classics Fed on the boards has something going where Darko showed up in the Classics Fed and then he got zapped into the future and talked to the red Darkos from the reimagined set. So he's got some cool stuff going on there, that Kevin Butcher. So check that Fed out. That's my plug for the week. Okay, let's see. Next quarter, or no, Stuart's going to talk about Dreadnought and Dragon Master.
Well, Dreadnought was a green alien, and we'll just leave it at that.
Oh, he's red. He's red.
Red for some, green for me. Mm. Dreadnought was the evolution of Comrade Terror. Did he have his death gimmick at this point? Or no, that was later, right?
No, that was way later.
He was much.
It was way later. No, he just went through the Transevolver. Hadn't killed him yet, Stuart.
That's right. He was badass at this point. Didn't do a whole lot with Dreadnought. Maybe a couple feuds with Commander Sam, but other than that, not a whole lot with Dreadnought. Dragon Master, on the other hand, is one of my all-time favorites, probably top five. I mean, he was Ricky Steamboat. I know his backstory, but to me, he was a quintessential babyface. And in fact, I've even divorced him from Pit Viper, and that I have the two as separate characters now. And Dragon Master has won my world championship. He's a constant contender, always finding ways or stories for him, always finding angles for him. Really like that drawing. That drawing just really resonated with me for some reason. And I thought it was a well fleshed out character, and he's done great things for me, and I've had a blast with him, and I always will, because he's just, to me, the perfect baby face in my fib. Tim, any thoughts on these two?
You know, I like Dreadnought a lot. I thought both the drawings were very good. I always thought, I guess, Dragon Master would have been more disfigured from the attack based on the way it was written up in the book. But I mean, it's kind of cool that he had the big scars down his face and all that. But I looked at him and Ricky Steamboat's the first guy you think of back then. And Dreadnought, I liked a lot. I just thought it was a really cool, cooler looking. I mean, Comrade Terror was a cool drawing, despite being a green alien. But I thought this one was even better. I thought it was just, he looked really imposing with whatever the weapon was in his hand. And he didn't really do that well for me, though. He was about a 500 wrestler. Dragon Master actually did better. Dragon Master had some success in singles and tag. But Dreadnought definitely played a part in my Fed. I thought really good drawings, though, by Chuck. I thought it was kind of cool to hear the backstory and the kind of the now this is our first use of the Transvolver,
mm-hmm.
Which is going to play a part in storylines for the next how many years, but really cool seeing like the evolution of Dragon Fighter into Pit Viper, and now you kind of see without the mask how he's looking.
So at Galacticon, Tom told us that Pit Viper was going to unmask, and go back to his roots. But I guess I never thought Pit Viper was Asian. So I was expecting more of a scarred up, like Bob Back, not like Bob Back, you know what I mean? Though, like a scientific, like Rick Martel or something like that. So then when it turns out he was Asian, I'm like, oh, it's like scarred up Ricky Steamboat. It's like if the angle where Ric Flair rubbed his face, and it left permanent scarring or something. But, one thing I just noticed, and I looked at then Rogue and Scourge, and I noticed this on Chaos, too, because, we talked about it before, especially we noticed as we started to go through these cards, is that, I think a lot of us had these kind of golden memories that the rules really solidified after about the first three sets. But if you look at these cards, if you look at the three guys who have tag leave, are Rogue, Scourge, and Dragon Master, but they're all leave tag. They're not tag leave. Those are reversed. Chaos doesn't have an end of the ropes. Dreadnought, he has the death jump two out of the rings, and it was right. Rogue has two out of the rings, but a pile driver two with choice H. So some of those things that we just thought got solidified earlier really didn't, and they continue to evolve. So it'll be interesting as we go through these cards. To see, when things really kind of really tighten up in terms of the rules and mechanics of the game. But yeah, Dragon Master, oh my God, I love this guy. I think he won my interplanetary title, and he won a lot of Galaxian and interplanetary tag titles, depending on who his partner was. And Dreadnought, I think he held my Galaxian belt, and no, he held my interplanetary title. I think he did pretty good for me with this card. So I like both these guys. They're two cool updates, even though Dragon Master was nothing like I expected at all.
Yeah, I like these guys as well. Dreadnought had a good run for me. I think he had an interplanetary reign. I always enjoyed when he would start the match with the humiliating slap in face. That was just when that was your first role, I always just got into that. And Dragon Master too, yeah, I love this card. Did really well for me, especially in tags with Pulsar Prime, and then later with Rising Sun. They were great Galaxian tag champs for me. And I was just kind of looking, reviewing the moves and the stats, and I give Tom credit, coming up with all these original characters and like fleshing out movesets. Dragon Master's got Whip into Buckle 3 to move. It was a simpler time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very, very, very much enjoyed these cards.
Yeah, Dreadnought was a guy who had a lot of named moves on his card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With the atomic warhead becomes the nuclear warhead.
Mm-hmm.
I always did like the super punch howitzer. I always thought that a great name for a move.
Yeah.
And heavy artillery, I always just thought that was like he gets him in the corner and just starts throwing a bunch of clubber in.
Mm-hmm.
And torpedo launch, I always thought was like you press him and then woo!
Oh.
Give a little toss. So, all right. Last but not least, we have some maybe utility cards, but they're important ones. We have Corey with Omega, Commissioner Carter, and Ursa Major.
Yeah, so Omega, you know, kind of officially now has a manager card. I mean, he was considered the first manager in 2089 when we just added a distractor rating to his 2087 wrestling card, but now it's kind of, you know, officially retired, no longer wrestling. Always thought the artwork, it was good artwork, but he almost kind of looked a little bit like an Italian godfather or something like that to me, in my opinion.
Like a Jay Strongbow?
Sure, there you go. But you know, just didn't, he almost looked like a little too like heelish in my opinion, just kind of sinister. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's he can do what he wants.
he's gonna make you an offer you can't refuse, Corey.
Exactly. And then he'll give you the tomahawk thrust. But then of course we have Ursa Major, the first, you know, I can't remember what term was used in the handbook, but
undercard bum.
There you go. Yeah, I was gonna say enhancement talent, but I know that wouldn't have been said at that time. You know, looking at the card, I mean, defensively, other than the pin, he's not that terrible. He doesn't have a leave, but the obviously very, very high pin rating. And again, you mentioned it, Chad, about the rules not being set in place. He has six choice situations here,
and no charts.
No charts. No. Well, charts. But
probably in Tom's thought, then there's no automatic throw into the charts if you're playing with the simple rules.
Sure. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, that's and I kind of wonder how many people at that time maybe were playing more of the basic rules. But you know, and he's got both choice G and H, which, you know, were two death jump situations, so no out of the ring, like you say, no chart situations. All C ratings, which I believe was another first, and a DQ of 2, which I think was also the first.
Yeah, that was really low.
Yeah. I know for me, I remember him beating Tendron one time, and that was a very surprise win. Other than that, with this card, I don't think he ever beat anybody else, nor should he have. But it was fun to have this card as you started getting more new talent in, and you know, people like Chaos and Matador. This is a good guy to kind of put them over and make sure they get a good start in the Fed. And then kind of a long-awaited card, an authority figure, and that's Commissioner Carter. And you know, as I kind of looked at his different, you know, situations, you could roll for title shots, you could roll for suspensions. Now, when I was playing, the original Ringside Companion had come out with the updated feud table. And so you kind of had those situations where they'd say roll for suspension. And so I'm curious, you know, at this, but that hadn't come out at this time in real life. So I'm curious, like for like Chad and Tim, did you just roll anytime somebody got severely injured, or, you know, how did you kind of decide when to roll for the suspensions, or did you have a set policy?
I think I just did it if there was a, you know, like a big time injury or something,
mm-hmm,
you know, probably six cards or higher. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the highest one on the feud table was. Was it 10 or 12? If you got,
I think it was 12.
It was 12 like at that time. Yeah.
Two or 12 on the feud chart.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Yeah.
On the Mark mm-hmm. Taggart stretcher chart.
Yes.
Greatest chart of all time. Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you, Mark.
So yeah, I think that's, yeah, I don't think I did a lot on the suspension until it was more force fed to you,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I love the title shot thing. I thought mm-hmm. that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just to have
that. I definitely use both. I think I would use the suspensions if like the same person kept, you know, like if there was an attack by, you know, whoever, and they attacked somebody and injured them more than one wrestler, then I would say, okay, well, now this is getting out of hand. We gotta, you know, put a stop to this. And so that's when I would use the card for suspensions. I do remember I used to have a sheet that I would keep with the game, and I would have a list of like all the injuries and for how many cards and when they came back. And then on the bottom of that, I would have a list of all the suspensions that were going, that were ongoing. So usually had a lot more injuries than I did suspensions, but yeah, I do remember Carter was great for that. It was a great idea for a card. Mm-hmm. Although I was hoping for Santo Dabrini, but you know, I got what I got.
Cause like when Tom told us at Galacticon, I think the little sheet he gave us even said, you know, perhaps it's time for Santo Dabrini. But
I think it did. Yeah.
Maybe someday we'll see Santo Dabrini. But, you know, the whole suspension thing, one thing I forgot of, I don't know why this came to mind. So I had Commander Sam, he got injured by somebody and it was like for a long time, but then he was fighting probably Comrade Terror or somebody in a Titan death match. Like that was already scheduled. So he wrestled him and then he got injured again. And since injuries were doubled, and it was like, it's like he gave him an atomic warhead on the floor. So he was up, he was injured for like 34 cards.
Oh God.
So he had a neck brace and a wheelchair. So he was like doing the Ron Wright gimmick before. And he did, like, eventually he was getting better. So he rose out of the chair. There was a big emotional, probably Magnum TA moment, but he should have kicked the shit out of Dreadnought or something. When you were talking about your injury list, I was just, because I had a note card, but then of course, like a dumbass, I would erase people so I don't have a history of who was injured, but I just remember Sam's thing or it's like suspension. Yeah,
I would cross them off, but then once the page was kind of full, I would just crumple it up and start a new one with the if I had like 20 injuries, I would just sit there and maybe only two of them were active. I would just crumple it up and start a new sheet with the two active ones. And
yeah,
have a good history either.
Yeah. But I was the same way where all my injuries were, I had way more injuries than suspensions be over here. Like two, and then like six injuries.
But then every now and then you'd get like the group suspended because there were these group attacks that would happen. And all of a sudden he'd just say, nope, you're all gone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like, shit, I lost the whole one side of a feud.
Yeah, book around this, fun boy. Yeah, that was not easy.
Did anybody ever use the roll for the title shots? That's something I never did.
I did. I used that a decent amount, because I thought it was just a cool concept at the time.
Yeah, I did it too. Okay.
Not a lot, but I did it when I thought it, you know, kind of fit.
Yeah. I like the concept, but I just... And then even today, I have trouble using that. I just like to do my own booking, you know, and just...
Me too. I don't use it anymore.
Yeah. Oh, not me. If I was at Ideals, I'd roll that fucker, see what happened. That's what it's there for, to help stimulate ideas.
Right.
I don't think I use that Omega card much at all. I never used babyface managers much at all. So,
you know, the only reason I tried to use them, especially in like big matches, was, and I'm going through this now. I mean, you know, because I started over, I'm midway through 2091. The heels just dominate. Once you give them managers and you give them that out, and the babyfaces don't have the same out.
Yeah.
You know, you give them that one extra chance, and sometimes that's all they need to come back and win the matches. And so, you know, like the win-loss records, when you look at them, I mean, all the guys that are doing well, it's mostly the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And I know, you know, Omega's not supposed to interfere or whatever, but I'd have like in a big, you know, if he, like Star Wars fighting Thantos and Omega's at ringside, he'd freaking light him up with a tomahawk thrust every once in a while.
Because you know Thantos is cheating like a mother, so you know he's gonna sit there and
And Ursa Major, man, I love that guy. And when I first saw him, I'm like, he looks like Beast Rider. So I had that they were brothers. So
they were about equally as
they weren't worth a shit.
The cards were statted. I did
the Bulldog ride and the Comet ride, you know. The Comet ride was a Bulldog too.
Oh yeah.
He beat Chaos, baby. So he's a legend in my Fed.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, before we kind of wrap up on 92, I mean, I think the other two big things that kind of came out of the set were you had Spike going heel again and going back to the Gladiators. You know, after becoming this virtuous good guy in 91, he's like, the hell with this. And wound up going back to the Gladiators in 92. So, you know, if you were keeping your war games points and all of that, you know, that's a big bonus right there, is now you got to like realign all of that. And then the other thing was just the ongoing story with the Serpent Unman, who was pretty much MIA in this set. Yeah. Didn't really get anything. And they said, well, he still shows up and wrestles occasionally, but that's about it. And they didn't really mention him at all, other than just a little blurb in the section with Bounty Hunter. What did they say? I'm looking at it here. It said, all I could do was wonder, where is the Serpent Unman? But then they said that, he would wrestle occasionally, but that was it. But, you know, you didn't find anything else out until the next card. So
was this when you may have started using Kraken and Bounty Hunter as the Mercenaries tag team, because they were both kind of solo in this set?
Yeah. Yeah. This is around the time that started. I really did. I love that. And I'm doing that in 2091. Now I'm having them kind of, not necessarily being in a group together, but being kind of loosely affiliated and just kind of teaming up. I just love that team. They're just really tough because Kraken's got the good level two. You got Bounty Hunter with the +3 finish. Mm-hmm. They're a tough team. They're not winning a lot, you know, because they don't wrestle often as a team.
Right.
They're just a tough team, and they were fun to use. I really liked them a lot. Mm-hmm. But that was a name I used for them. And then later on, I'm like, oops, going to have to do something here.
Well, it's just when I was reading the book again today that I remembered that and noticed, you know, because I think their bios or their press conferences were right adjacent to each other.
Yeah.
And it was just them. So I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just really the whole War Games thing I thought was really cool. And then he's got the preview in there for 93 and, you know, ready to mail in early June. So, you got the promo trying to get everybody psyched up for the next set, you know. But it was just really cool. I thought that, it was really great. Being this is like the first time you're going to start getting the sets, you know, twice a year.
Right.
I just thought it was really nice. I love the whole chaos thing. I thought that was just great. Just a lot of good stuff in this game edition. The only thing is, and I think I said this probably in 2091 too, this is when it started getting a little unwieldy with the number of guys that you had in your Fed. Cause you were you're pushing like 60 people, you know, as far as active wrestlers now. And that's a big Fed.
Yeah.
You know, so unless you're playing a ton, which a lot of people were, cause you know, they were kids back when this was all going on.
Right.
So if you were playing a lot, you could get guys in, but man, you know, trying to work with 50, 60 guys, that's just a big roster, to try and get everybody some time just to kind of, you know, have some matches for people. But yeah, I loved it. The whole War Games thing was just a really cool idea.
And the one other thing that Butcher's doing cool in his Fed is that he has Commissioner Zachary Cutter as a referee in his Fed. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool little callback, you know? Oh, I like that. I do agree that with that preview, this is really one of the first times that Tom went into great depth about previewing the next set.
Mm-hmm.
And really built, you know, and a startling mysterious newcomer will arrive on the GWF scene and his presence will usher the GWF into 2094 and beyond. Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. So...
But sure it's just kind of cool to get, you know, get the hype going right now. And so, you got people thinking about things, and you could tell that he kind of knew, I don't know if he knew all the cards for the next set at this point, but you could tell at least he had like, you know, a plan fleshed out. Cause I've never quite figured out how far ahead was Tom really thinking with some of these, but here, you know, that he's at least got a good idea for 93. You know, what's coming down the line.
Right.
Cause I've always wondered some of these things, like, you know, do you start a storyline and then hope you can, come up with a good finish for it, you know, later right. on, or, you know, how far ahead are these, some of these things kind of, you know, thought out. But because let's face it, I mean, if the first game edition would have flopped and four people would have bought it, we never would have seen a second one. So,
right.
You know, you could have all the great ideas in the world, but if nobody buys it, it's like Star Wars. If that had flopped at the box office, the first one, you never would have had, you know, 400 other movies. But yeah.
7 through 9 would be the good examples of writing with no fucking sequel in mind, I think, in my humble opinion.
But yeah, I just thought it was kind of really cool too, to, because you knew people would, you know, in the Super Report were going to be going nuts over this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was anxious to see too, because once I started playing with Chaos, I was like, man, how soon, you know, because you start thinking about the Super Report and right. I'm thinking, man, Chaos is going to bust into these rankings and just be killing people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of anxious to see how long it would take Chaos to kind of work his way up the food chain, you know, and get to the title.
Right.
But yeah, and you'd have people talking about 93 too. I mean, that was going to be part of the whole, you know, the Super Reports going forward is, ooh, what's going to happen now with this? And, you know, so yeah, let the speculation run wild. I just thought it was a really cool way to kind of, you know, keep people talking.
Right. I agree. Well, I think we've had a first tonight. I believe Corey fell asleep on the podcast for the first time, taking the Stu Lowry role. He dozed
second
off
time.
There.
Second time.
Second time. Second time tonight, or second time
in ever? History.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, fans go back through the annals of history and find out when Corey was sleeping before.
I was just telling my kids about that actually before we started. Because I'm very tired. I apologize.
That's
it's not
okay,
the it's not the content. It's the time of year.
It's okay. It's the host.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, let's put this thing to bed. Stu, why don't you talk your shit about Denmark there? How's that for getting to the chase?
Appreciate the cue.
No problem.
Well, I'd like to give a shout out to the Baltimore Ravens for disappointing me in playing one of these dumbest football games of all time, which keeps alive T-Swizzle, Tay-Tay, Taylor Swift, who I wish would just go away and leave the National Football League forever. Please. Gosh, I am sick of that. So that's my rant for today. Please don't show her. I mean, somebody hide her, please. Get the cameras off of her. Anything. I am so sick of Taylor Swift and Jason Kelce.
How is it any different than when in other sports, like in college sports, they show people's parents all the time?
I don't know. It's so obnoxious. I don't care. I don't give a crap about them. Please stop showing them.
I remember when A-Rod was dating Madonna, they would show her in the stands, and I'm like, oh, really? I'm going to put up with this now?
I know. So, anyway, enjoy the fans of Taylor Swift for as long as this lasts, NFL, which is probably one season. With that, I will say goodnight, Denmark.
All right. Thank you, Stuart. Corey.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you for hosting. I want to give attention to the other Filsinger Games content providers out there. We're Sam, Mike, and Todd over at Roll Up, the official podcast of Filsinger Games. Grant Pachoco on the Solo Promoter YouTube channel. And I believe he's also kind of relaunched or rebranded his podcast. So you can check that out as well. I need to listen to that. So great to hear from you again, Grant. Always enjoy your content. And there's also Steve Tower at After Further Review, Dave Little at Heartland Championship Wrestling, Lee Long Preen, the Dizzy Dice Podcast, Brock Atkinson and Brockster Builds, as well as Brock and Mike's Filsinger Games Character Spotlight. Also give a quick shout out to my wrestling team. Over the weekend, we had 4 events in 3 days. That's right, 4 events in 3 days. That's a lot of wrestling. Yeah, a lot of wrestling.
How many events in how many days?
4 and 3. We had a triangular last Thursday night. We won one of the duels and lost the other one only by basically one match. It was a six point duel. Friday night, our ladies went to a tournament down at Simley High School. One of our best lady wrestler, Amelia, ended up taking first place at that tournament, which was the second year in a row she's done that. We also had a fourth place, a fifth place, and a consolation champion. And we also had two separate tournaments on Saturday. Our 7th through 9th graders kind of had their own, what was just called the 9th grade and under league. My son took 3rd in his bracket and got 2 other 3rd places as well. Very tough competition among those younger wrestlers. Just a lot of fun to see some schools we don't normally wrestle. And then the other boys and the girls went to another tournament over in Roseville. Had another first place for Amelia and a third place for one of our boys, Elijah. So a lot of wrestling, a lot of fun. We have our last home meet this coming Thursday that will be streamed on YouTube. You'll hear this episode after that takes place, but you can always watch the replay if you really want to. So, but thank you everybody for clicking, listening, and downloading.
All right, thank you, Corey. Tim.
Well, I got a few here. First of all, if anybody has Disney Plus and is a music fan and kind of likes the Beatles, or even if you're on the fringe for the Beatles, definitely check out that Get Back series that Peter Jackson directed. It's basically putting together, cobbling together from, you know, hundreds of hours of video and audio. He put together about 6 hours, 7 hours of what led up to their final concert. And I just found it amazing how a guy like Paul McCartney could come in and he just had a guitar riff and he's playing it over and over and over, trying to come up with like lyrics and just a rhythm to it. And it turns into Get Back. And it just blows my mind how people can do that and be creative musically like that. But just it's a fun watch just to see some of the interaction. George quits the band. Spoiler, he does come back. It's just a great watch if you've got the time and you're a fan of the Beatles at all. Because I really wasn't on other than the quick run at the end last week, just wanted to talk about Zeke had those questions about Randy Savage, about whether or not we were going to read the book. I'll probably read the book, but it's not going to be anytime soon because I've got a bunch of books in front of it right now, unfortunately. But I'll probably get it at some point and take a read through. I'm going to probably fall in with the rest of the guys and say, you know, if he wasn't one of my top 10 most important signings, he's probably in the top 20. Just a great addition to the game though. And it was really cool when I found out we got him, cause I was like, holy shit, that's a big name. And also just in case Corey's asleep, go get your t-shirts at tkostore.com. It's tkostore.com. Go, it's got all your Uncharted Territory stuff. It's got your t-shirts, your sweatshirts, and your hoodie. Shh, don't wake Corey up. But it's all there. You can go there and get all our stuff. So do that as soon as you can and help us out. And, you know, we have bills to pay here. But other than that, I just want to say thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll be back again next time with episode 168.
Maybe we should have Pike make us UTP long nightgowns and caps so caps. Corey can wear that and Stuart can wear those, and then they can just roll into bed, or they can just fall asleep where they're sitting at night.
Yes, I like
well
that.
I got 18 announcements to keep my brother on as long as I can, so I'm gonna get going. I'm gonna talk really slow. Thank you to everybody who listened to episode 166 and commented, TTX, Throwing Toasters, Kevin the Butcher, The Faction, DK2, and Matt. Thank you for listening and making time to leave a comment. It was very exciting to hear the return of the Solo Promoter podcast that popped into my feed the other day, and I just said, woohoo, and I listened to it. So thank you, Grant. Good to hear you back. Also, in other realms of anti-social media, over the weekend, a lot of cool classic wrestling footage that has not been posted or shared before was unearthed by a YouTube channel called Wrestling Playlist Newsletter. If you're familiar with the Pro Wrestling Only message board and PWO Loss over there, he's the one behind that. And he unearthed a lot of cool stuff, and I'm sure some of it's been posted otherwise before, but a lot of it seems to be pretty new, so it's pretty cool. So go there, check it out. You know, there's some Chicago stuff, but there's some stuff from California. I watched a match with Warren Bockwinkel against Wilbur Snyder. Stuart, you got to watch it. It's got your name written all over it. Also, a YouTube channel called Larry's Classic Sports just posted a pair of really cool old school Japan matches. One is a Dory Funk Jack Briscoe match for the NWA title that took place in Japan, And then there's also a jumbo Saruta match against, it's either Jack or, yep, Jack Briscoe's from January of 1974. So today would be like the almost the 49th, 59th. I don't know. Do your own math. I'm not here to give out math tips, people. Let's see. Also, I want to give a shout out. I talked about Kevin the Butcher's Fed. Another Fed I've been reading and being entertained by lately is Mark Taggart's NWA Pro Wrestling USA promotion on the message board. So fun stuff there. He does kind of like some bigger arena cards and he does some house show matches. So check that out. Always enjoy that. I want to give a congratulations to the gentleman who is our head coach for our wrestling club, Coach Durbin. He was inducted or received 2 weeks ago a Lifetime Achievement Award from the U.S. Wrestling Officials Association for the state of Iowa. So he received that honor. And then I was not on last Tuesday night because we were doing a little surprise for him at one of our wrestling meets. We introduced the kids club and then we unfurled a big banner that said, congratulations, Coach Durbin, because he's contributed to our wrestling community at the high school, middle school, and now at the youth wrestling level with a lot of coaching. And his kids are far removed. They are wrestling coaches in high school and at the college level on their own. So he's far removed from having kids in the program and he's still there coaching all the time. And he certainly could be out making a lot of money officiating on those nights too. So I appreciate him. And then just one little update. When you mentioned, whoever mentioned books, the Randy Savage books, I do have quite a stack here as well. One book I have been reading and enjoying lately is the Todd Gordon book, Todd is God. Pretty easy read, but it's pretty interesting. You know, you never know how much is true and how much is baloney, but it's a fun read. So I've been enjoying it, learned a few things. So I do recommend that. I kind of stalled out on the Ric Flair book by Tim Hornbaker just when it got to the more modern stuff. I'm like, yeah, this part of his career doesn't really interest me. So I'll finish it someday, but it was an interesting book from the beginning. So that's all I got. Everybody stay safe, be excellent to each other. And you know what? I think I shared this before, but in life, sometimes you can be a leader, sometimes you can be a follower, and sometimes you can be an asshole. You never have to be an asshole. Be a leader or be a follower. Peace out, everybody. Have a good night.
Hey, promoters, it's Corey again, and we would love to hear from you. Please send us your questions, topic suggestions, or any other comments, and we might include your audio in a future episode of Uncharted Territory. There's two ways you can do it. You can go to tinyurl.com/UNCTER. Again, tinyurl.com/UNCTER. You can click the message button and record up to a 1 minute message, and we can include that in a future episode. Or you can email us either audio or a written question at our email address, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Again, utpodcast2020@gmail.com.
Want to show your friends that you listen to Uncharted Territory? Well, head on over to our store at tkostore.com/collection/uncharted-territory. You can choose from a shirt or hoodie with Travis Heckle's great podcast cover artwork, or a shirt with a design inspired by one of our favorite bands. While there, check out the other great merchandise at TKO, including shirts of several of the top MMA fighters, including Bigfoot Silva, Tim Sylvia, Ensign Inoue, and more. Need a shirt made for your event or organization? Contact TKO, run by Filsinger Games promoter Justin Bulka, aka Pike Mojo, to place your order. Again, that's tkostore.com, TEEKOstore.com.
Insert wolf music. Thank you.
check the salmon with a spoon. I once got busy in the Burger King bathroom.
It's $5 fish sandwich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Profound.